With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Fortunately, Mexico has not retaliated against us. I know they have an open investigation on pork, and I have raised this repeatedly with my counterpart.
It's U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Jamison Greer.
The Mexicans have been very pragmatic. They are quite dependent on our market for their growth and for their employment. They know that. We know that. That's why we're able to proceed in a fairly non-dramatic way with the Mexicans. And they understand that if they take action on pork, the consequences for them could be quite challenging given their dependence on us. So this is something that's important to me. It's something I've raised at the highest levels with the Mexican government, and trust me, we are monitoring this, and if we see any movement on this, we will work with you, and we will do the necessary to maintain that open market we've been able to enjoy over the past several years.
Greer was testifying recently before the Senate, but U.S. farmers face different risks from Canada and Mexico as that USMCA agreement enters rolling negotiations without a long-term extension. Meridian Ag Advisors Chief Ag Economist Wesley Davis says Canada primarily affects farm inputs and oil seeds, while Mexico drives grain, protein, and produce trade. Now, the agreement remains in effect, but the U.S. declined automatic renewal, triggering annual reviews unless the three countries later approve an extension. That uncertainty could influence investment, contracting, and cross-border supply chains. New 50% tariffs on specified Canadian products begin August 19th, although potash and energy are excluded. Canada remains a major two-way market for fertilizer, grains, oil seeds, and other ag inputs. Mexico, on the other hand, buys substantial U.S. corn, feed ingredients, meat, and other proteins, while shipping fresh produce north. Negotiators discussed ag, automobiles, metals, labor, and economic security during their latest bilateral round, a fourth U.S.-Mexico round planned for September. Cyclospora concerns are strengthening interest in controlled environment lettuce production as growers and retailers look for ways to reduce contamination risk. Cox Farms President Steve Bradley says greenhouse systems limit exposure to untreated surface water, wildlife, and other outdoor variables that can introduce pathogens. Company operates more than 700 acres of hydroponic greenhouses across North America. Water comes from municipal systems or wells and then undergoes additional monitoring, reverse osmosis, and ultraviolet treatment before entering production. Unused irrigation water captured, sterilized, and adjusted for nutrients and then returned to the crop through a closed-loop system. USDA, though, offering $35 million in grants for partnerships targeting feral swine damage across 14 states, providing producers with more support for trapping, land restoration, and disease protection. Funding is part of a broader $105 million federal eradication and control effort. Selected partners will work with landowners on trapping, habitat restoration, training, and related services. And this is Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
We also asked a question about free trade.
Director for the Center for Commercial Ag, Dr. Michael Engemeyer.
We've asked this question before. Specifically, we asked in 2020, we asked in 2025, and really the answers were very consistent with the previous times we've asked this question. 85%, the overwhelming majority of producers think that free trade benefits agriculture and other industries. And so I think that's also a very important question in the current trade environment where there's been imposition of tariffs or suggestions that we have tariffs on trade goods. And so this question kind of says that it may not be the best idea. But we also have been asking a question for the last several months, ever since July 2025 specifically, about the direction the country's going in. Specifically, would you say things in the U.S. today are generally headed in the right direction or on the wrong track? Just like May, the percent that say we're heading in the right direction is much, much lower than what it was for the last 6 months of 25, where it ranged from 67 to 75%, and 75% being December. Now we're in that 52 to 53% of respondents think we're heading in the right direction. I think this question is important to think about when you're thinking about the long-run policy environment and specifically the long-run future expectations index. The future expectations index is likely lower in May and June, particularly this month, because of the answer to this question. People are more pessimistic about the direction of the country. They're probably going to be more pessimistic about their future expectations. I want to turn to a couple questions that are more optimistic, if you will. As I said, the Ag Economy Barometer Index was down. Sentiment was down. That was true both in the index of current conditions, the index of future expectations. So both short run and long run sentiment is down. What's not down is sentiment related to land values. The short-term farmland value expectations index declined a little bit, but it's still very steady. It's been very steady during the last year and hasn't come close to that index of 100. If we have an index of 100, that means the same percent of people think that land values are going to increase as expected land values to decrease in the next 12 months. But the current index suggests that there's substantially more people that think land values are going to increase in the next 12 months than decrease in the next 12 months. And so I would regard that as relatively optimistic regarding short-term land values. We achieved a record in terms of the long-term farmland value expectations index at 166. It matched the previous record that occurred one of the months in 2025. And so there's a lot of optimism regarding where land values may be in the next 5 years. To me, there's a conflict here between the index of future expectations being relatively weak and this land value question. Usually they're tied more closely together. And so the only way I can begin to interpret that is to think that the future expectations index is really more on what's happening to prices. If you look at futures prices for corn and soybeans, for example, they're not particularly high. We certainly don't see a ratchet up of those prices anytime soon. That would lead fairly sour sentiment regarding the next few years. On the other hand, they think that land values are going to hold steady because land values involve more than just prices. Specifically, when we ask people to list the factors that are impacting land values, the factor that's most commonly indicated by the respondents is the importance of outside investors. And so when they list the factors impacting land values, outside investors or interest from outside investors is always ranked as the most important factor, followed by net farm income, interest rates, and inflation. I think what's going on here is that even though they think, you know, there might be some weakness in corn and soybean prices and wheat prices in particular, they don't think that's going to translate into a reduction in land values in the next 5 years.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit TexasCorn.org and become a member today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Whenever we receive dues that come in to help operate our day-to-day mission in Plains Cotton Growers, we take a portion of those dues each year, and based on advice from our various committees, the executive committee, finance committee, we decide what proportion we can send on and forward to Cotton Council International.
Mark Brown, Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers.
I've always described it much like providing support to an international mission through your church organization. And so that's basically what we're doing, is a standpoint of we are able to help support Plains Cotton Growers and help promote and advance West Texas cotton by promoting CCI and working directly with them and allowing them to go out internationally in places that we can't necessarily get to. And so consequently, it might be one time per year, sometimes it's twice a year, that they bring special trade missions through the United States in order to promote the U.S. cotton industry and the Texas cotton industry. And actually this week we are going to get the opportunity to meet a number of textile merchants that are being brought to the U.S. to learn about U.S. cotton. They are coming to us from Bangladesh. And of course those textile mills over there in Bangladesh are very important customers to us already. And as they come through, they'll have the opportunity to meet our local merchants who trade in cotton each and every day, and they'll be able to share contact information. They'll be able to meet each other face-to-face and actually get to know each other and develop a relationship. Then also, they will have the opportunity to learn more about West Texas cotton and about what we do to grow a very high-quality and valuable product that we will ship out all over the world. And hopefully, whenever it's time to sell some cotton this winter, they will have an interest in this West Texas crop, and they'll pay special attention to what we have for sale to offer to them to fill their textile mills. And so we get to serve in a support role to them. In this particular special trade mission, they're bringing some very important customers from Bangladesh who are operating textile mills over there, and putting them in contact with our merchants of cotton and with our producers, so that they can actually meet producers, they can get out on the farm and actually see cotton as it's being produced. Something else that's interesting about that, Tony, is I've seen some of these trade missions come through. We see textile mill people all the time who deal with cotton in the final product before it's laid down and goes through the textile mill. But many of those people have never seen cotton growing in the field. And so it's always very interesting to see them and to see their reactions as they get the opportunity to actually see cotton plants that are growing and developing the fruit that will finally become the U.S. cotton bales that they're purchasing.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
During our committee's February USMCA hearing, my colleagues made clear on a bipartisan basis that the USMCA is vital to our economy and should be fully enforced.
Talking trade with U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer, Senate Finance Committee Chairman from Idaho, Mike Crapo.
What do you view as a realistic timeline for conclusion of the USMCA negotiations that are currently underway, keeping in mind the importance of business certainty?
There are some issues in USMCA which take a longer time to address. Issues that are quite important. Some of these are related to rules of origin. We want rules of origin in USMCA to be very strong to incentivize production in North America as opposed to other regions that have a lot of excess capacity or non-market practices. But it does take time to develop these. Similarly, I've heard from folks also in Congress about the need to strengthen labor and environment enforcement vis-a-vis Mexico. This can take time as well. That being said, I'm hopeful that before the end of the year, we can have at least options for President Trump and the leaders of Canada and or Mexico to consider potential interim arrangements or things that Canada can do on the one hand and Mexico can do on the other hand to strengthen enforcement, to improve their commitments toward us, and to make sure that we're managing all of the trade issues. So I would love to have between now and the end of the year at least some arrangements, one with Canada, one with Mexico, and then some of these issues that are really important, like rules of origin. I know labor environment is important to a lot of folks here, that take a little more time to have further discussion of that, including with Congress in the following year.
Next, market access for U.S. agriculture exports is also, as you know, one of my top priorities. The administration's agreements on reciprocal trade include many very important market access provisions. Could you provide a status update on the implementation and entry into force of these agreements?
Some countries, such as Argentina and Cambodia, have already started the process of removing tariffs. Cambodia, for example, has already removed all of its tariffs for us. We have some smaller markets that maybe are not huge for us, like North Macedonia, that they've removed all of their tariffs. I had the Malaysian trade minister in my office yesterday, and we talked about their time frame. They're looking to the fall to put through the changes. Again, they're reducing all of their tariffs to zero. They're removing non-tariff barriers that have been a problem for us for a long time. Indonesia is in a similar position of in the fall looking to implement fully all of their commitments. So we have a number of these agreements in place. We have an agreement with Jordan we signed yesterday. They've already taken action to further liberalize their market toward us. We have Israel that has just passed in the Knesset an agreement to accept American standards. So a variety of these countries have already implemented. Others are going through their domestic processes. And, of course, importantly, we have the EU that lowered their industrial tariffs to zero and provided a number of tariff rate quotas for American farmers earlier this month.
What assurances and steps is USTR seeking and taking to ensure that these commitments are durable and enforced over time?
So this word enforcement is so important to our administration. I know it's important to this committee. And trade enforcement, it means tariffs. When you have dispute settlement or a formal process that goes on for years, at the end of the day, if you win, a tariff is the implementing sanction if folks don't do this. So we expect these countries to implement. We expect in the future that these countries will retain these agreements because they've made them to the United States of America. As long as I'm here, you can count on me to use whatever tools I have, whether it's Section 301 or other tools to enforce these agreements. My hope would be that any successor would take the same strong approach to enforcing these agreements and promises.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
What's driving the cattle market of late? What are the news events?
Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading in Chicago.
Well, the USDA is planning to reopen the Mexican border on August 24th, and that worked its way into some pressure on the feeder cattle side. They are expected to resume August 24th through Douglas, Arizona, with two new Mexico ports potentially added later. Even though the initial volumes are going to be a little bit limited, the announcement still, I guess, eased fears of prolonged feeder cattle shortages. The reopening will be gradual, not necessarily something that's going to happen overnight. The Douglas port represented only about 15% of pre-screwworm cattle flows. So it's going to open, but it's not going to be like floodgates. Let's put it that way. Bunch of reports came out last week. July cattle on feed report was close to expectations. Feedlot inventories totaled about 11.37 million head. That was up a little over 2% year on year, which was within the expectations level, although it does show a change in the trend with more than less. Placements were lower than expected. However, June placements were approximately 3% below last year and represented the smallest June placement total in 17 years. But obviously, this is going to point to what we already know structurally, is that there's a relatively tight fed cattle supplies out there. Feedlot marketings remain below last year. Guess kind of the same reasoning. Less head, less marketings. June marketings were down 2.7%, basically matching expectations. But net-net, based on an inventory, the national cattle herd appears to be stabilizing. Not stabilizing near the lows, but stabilizing. The July cattle inventory was estimated at 94.2 million head, slightly above the revised year earlier total. That data suggests that several years of herd contraction may, keyword may, be ending, but there is no clear evidence of that as of yet. Breeding herd data remains mixed. The beef cow herd was approximately 0.7% below last year, while beef replacement heifers were 2.7% higher. This increase basically in the retained heifers may be an early rebuilding signal. So we'll see how that plays out. The 2026 calf crop remains historically tight. USDA estimated the calf crop at approximately 98.5% of last year. Fewer calves will restrict the feeder cattle availability, and that could be supportive for prices over the long term, despite the reopening of the Mexican imports. And then more to the point of the nitty-gritty for cattle markets, that's looking at the cash cattle prices. They fell sharply from the previous week. I think trade was mostly in the 230 to 231 area in the south, and about 365 dress. That was down $6 to $8 week on week. And then also the wholesale side of the equation also weakened, with choice and select boxed beef cutouts declining somewhere around, well, with the index breaking somewhere around $9 week on week. So cash looking a little on the weaker side. We got the data that's already been absorbed from the reports last week. We've got the news headlines with the opening of the Mexican border. We'll keep an eye on grain prices. Maybe if they continue to fall, they'll help out the margins.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Organic crop yields were generally lower than conventional yields. No surprise there.
Dr. Michael Lingemeyer is director for the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue.
For example, corn yields averaged about 24% lower. Soybean yields were 23% lower over the five-year period. Oat yields, on the other hand, were 36% lower. Winter wheat yields and alfalfa was similar. If yield were the only factor that mattered, conventional production, particularly for corn and soybeans, would clearly have the advantage. But that's only part of the profitability story. Organic crops receive substantially higher market prices. Over the five-year period, organic corn generated about 80% more gross revenue per bushel than conventional corn, while organic soybeans generated more than double the gross revenue per bushel. These price premiums more than offset the lower yields. Of course, higher revenues doesn't automatically mean higher prices. Organic production also comes with higher production costs, particularly in some situations. Weed management is substantially more intensive. Crop rotations are often more complex, and labor requirements tend to be greater. So the real question isn't whether organic crops bring in more revenue, it's whether they leave more money at the end of the year. According to the FinBin data, they often do. Organic corn during this five-year period generated average net returns about $310 per acre higher than conventional corn, while organic soybeans averaged about $325 per acre higher than conventional soybeans. These are significant differences, obviously, and help explain why organic production continues to attract interest. But here's what I believe is the most important finding in this study. The biggest difference wasn't the average profit, it was the variation between farms. For conventional corn, the difference between the highest and lowest performing farms was $866 per acre. I did not make a mistake there, $866 per acre. For organic farms, this spread exceeded $1,400 per acre. So obviously some farms are doing really good and others not so good. The same pattern appeared for soybeans, although the median organic soybean farm earned substantially more than the median conventional farm. Some organic soybean producers generated returns that were similar to the lowest performing conventional operations. And so just because you're organic doesn't mean it's going to be more profitable. It depends on management. So what does this tell us? It tells us that organic production offers greater profit potential, but also requires much stronger management to consistently achieve those returns. Experience, weed control, crop rotations, marketing, and overall management appear to matter even more in organic systems than they do in conventional production, with a highlight on weed control. It's very important to control weeds in organic systems. There's two additional points that are easy to overlook. Most organic operations don't grow only corn and soybeans. Also, there is a transition period of 2 to 3 years required before a field can be certified as organic. Net returns during those transition years can be relatively low. Let's look at the crop rotations. Organic rotations typically include crops like oats, winter wheat, or alfalfa. In this study, those crops generally produce returns that were similar to, or in some cases lower, than their conventional counterparts. That means you can't evaluate an organic system looking only at the profitability of corn or soybeans. This is a very important point. You must evaluate the economics of the entire crop rotation. You also need to consider whether reliable markets exist for every crop in that rotation. Case in point is alfalfa. There may not be a market for organic alfalfa in your area. Depending on where your farm is located, finding profitable markets for organic small grains or forages in general can be much more challenging than marketing organic corn or soybeans.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.